Now I feel even weirder. We're beginning our panel as Star Wars fanfare.
Oh, it's amazing.
Do you want me to hit the door?
No, it's just leading. I'm asking.
I'm asking for in terms of like.
Oh, absolutely. That door needs to be shut. But
are we allowed to close the door? I thought we got trouble over that one.
I don't know.
Why is my microphone pointing that way?
Oh, is that where your microphone is? Well, the iPad and the microphone's on the top.
Well, it's a phone, so of course it's on the bottom.
Oh, yeah. You're totally right.
Okay.
Was that
thing?
Talk about D&D?
Yeah.
Are you sure you're talking about my nightmares?
Okay. Welcome everybody.
We are in fact talking about your nightmares. Yeah. That's about it.
2015 round two of Winston-Salem Comic Con here at the Convention Center at Dixie Classic Fairgrounds, put on by Burke Street Comics. Welcome everyone to the first panel of the day. As always, Name Redacted Podcast is hosting your panels. Please go subscribe. There you go. Your three hosts are here. My name is Alexander Fulmer.
I'm Colin Norris.
I'm Chris Nielsen.
And our guest today,
Chris Gann.
Yay!
There you go. That's the appropriate response.
And of course, most people are saying, who's that guy?
This is where we get to find the sociopaths who don't pick up on social cues.
What is it clapping? Never heard of that. So welcome. Thank you guys for coming in and sitting in with us. We run the panels here every year. We appreciate everyone who comes in and sits down. The way we do this is a little bit informal. We sit down and talk to our guests a little bit, then we ask you guys to open it up to question and comment kind of thing. I hope you guys have fun. We always have fun doing it, so hopefully this will get you guys to come back and do it again and spend a little money when you're out there and bring your friends back.
Get some Pokemon erasers.
This is a great con. We really enjoy the crap out of this con, and we really hope you guys like it too, and this is one of the things that we think kind of adds to this con is this particular panel section. So thank you guys for coming in. Today, our first panel is going to be about comic book content in movies versus print media and kind of how they work together, how they're a little bit different. And that's why we brought our guest Chris Gann with us, because he knows a pretty decent bit about this. We are going to let him start it out a little bit, give you a little bit of background on who he is, what he does. And we'll take it from there. So, Chris, please. Throwing you under the bus real quick.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Yes.
Thanks for being here. For the applause for a guy that most people probably have no clue who I am. It's okay.
Familiar.
What was that?
You didn't sound
familiar. Well, great. I actually created a... I've done a lot, actually, since I was a teenager. Are any of you... Burke Street Comics, you've all been to Burke Street, right?
They're the ones who put this on, just so you know.
I grew up with Ryan Lusk, who owns Burke Street, and when I was a teenager, I published a comic book here in town called Good vs. Evil, and it was back in the early 90s, and it was before the internet existed, but it wasn't even an inkling of what it is. Yeah.
It was a simpler time before.
It was a simpler time, yes. When the phones were actually attached to the wall and you had to shuffle into the kitchen to answer it. And you actually couldn't walk into the other room. Then cordless phones came out, and that was a huge thing. Yes, it was a wonderful time. And back then it was just unheard of for anyone. Nowadays they're billionaire teenagers, but back then... to do what we did was pretty remarkable. Toot my own horn. Actually, Shelton out here, Shelton Drum with Heroes Aren't Hard to Find, I owe that guy mad props because he gave us a shot. He carried our comic book in Heroes Aren't Hard to Find. And he had us at Heroes Con. It was awesome. It was 93, 94. And that was really where I got my start. And then... graduated from the comic. I published two books. One was Good versus Evil, and the other one was Macabre Tales. And it's hilarious because you can actually Google Good versus Evil, and we actually come up in the database. Which is, I only released like 500 issues, so it was pretty funny. Then moved from there to film school. Went to film school in Wilmington, North Carolina. Worked with back then it was Carolco Studios, and now it's Screen Gems. I started a toy company, long story short, after the rise and fall of the Beanie Babies. It was a very exciting time. And that actually inspired me to get into the toy business. I started my own line of toys. It was just some charity teddy bears. And then people started reaching out to me saying, you're already in China. Can you make this for us? Can you make this for us? And then we got into the film. It's funny because it came around full circle, and the film industry started contacting me, and the first movie that reached out to me was The Tooth Fairy with The Rock. And has anyone seen The Tooth Fairy? Show of hands. All right.
It's a classic.
I watched it like 8 times.
Okay, well, there's a scene where he's on this, where he's in the child's room, and this was so hilarious because they were trying to save money on the budget, and they didn't want to waste a fortune on digitizing it all and all the special effects. So what they did was they just, for the child's room, they used this enormous sound stage. And, for example, for the child's bedspread, they used a 20-foot tall curtain and that sort of thing. And so they came to us and said, we want you to produce a 15-foot alligator, plush toy alligator. So when he falls off the bed, he lands on this alligator on the floor. That's the child's play, the 6-inch little, but it's 16 inches. So we produced the alligator and shipped it to them while they were for the shooting, and I actually have a picture. You can go to my website, by the way. It's ganmemorials.com. It's my custom toy company. Yes.
Didn't you develop a 15-foot?
Yeah, I'll get to that. I'll get that one too. Yes.
We're getting there.
So we worked on the alligator. What was that?
I will buy it if you make it.
I've had a lot of people say that. Right tomorrow, we'll tell them. So we did the alligator. We started there, and the gentleman that worked on Tooth Fairy enjoyed working with us so much that he actually worked on some other films. He worked on Final Destination, Silent Hill 2, and so we developed toys for both of those films as well. We did the two of those. Final Destination was the fourth one. I think it was the fourth one, and there's a scene where she's having laser surgery.
Oh, God.
And she's holding a teddy bear, and the eyeball pops out. That's the fifth one. Okay. Yeah, we do.
And then she gets her face roasted off. All right.
Spoilers.
Spoiler alert. So we developed, there's a teddy bear she's holding, she's squeezing, and the eyeball pops out, and we had to develop this teddy bear with the eyeball that pops out. It was really funny. Then after that, it was Silent Hill 2, which I actually brought Robbie the Bunny from Silent Hill 2.
I remember that.
This is a larger version. They had us develop.
I didn't know that was from Silent Hill 2.
Yeah, they had a smaller one, and what they did, they said, we want you to make all these bunnies, but we're going to splatter them with blood. So we made 2,500 little 6-inch versions of this guy, and they just splattered them all with blood. And then there's a scene at the very, very beginning of Silent Hill 2 in the carnival, and they're all hanging in the limbo carnival sort of thing. It's hilarious, and they're all covered with blood. And then of course here's the larger version, and
it's awesome.
So I saw one of these on eBay for like $10,000. I thought, wow, I could just keep manufacturing these, putting them on the internet. And
can you get a
just
commission?
Secretly
or
making the money from it.
I'll just take fake blood at home and just spatter it on there. Like, oh, it's from the set.
Right. So it was, so we did that. The biggest windfall for us came a few years ago when they were filming Iron Man 3 in North Carolina. And set decorator reached out to me. It was hilarious. This is a funny, funny story. They reached out to me and she said, we need a toy developed. And I said, okay. And we're shooting a movie. Okay, we've worked in movies before. And she said, we want to develop a giant bunny. Something similar to the Velveteen Rabbit. Or is it Velveteen? Is that what it is?
Velveteen Rabbit.
And I said, okay, I can do that. Do you have permission for Velveteen? Well, no, we'll have to. So we don't want to get into that. We'll develop something similar ourselves. And I said, okay. I said, well, what? Can you tell me the name of the movie? Well, she said, it's called Chained Heat. And I said, Chained Heat?
That was
And I remember like a 70s exploitation movie about women in prison or something like that. And I thought, what in the world are they going to do with a giant bunny in prison? I was really trying to figure that one out.
Everything is going so well.
I spent many weeks working on that. So here's the thing. When they do these movies, they have code names for everything. So it started with Chained Heat, and I can't remember what the apparently they caught a lot of slack from that, a lot of flack from that because of the similarities, right? Yeah. So I can't remember what they changed the name to after that, but they always use code names, especially for Iron Man, because there were so many fans on the set, you know,
trying to get
in. The set, it was funny because the set was actually out in the middle of a, this is what's going to blow your mind. They shot a lot of this movie, well, of course, at the ports in Wilmington, and they also shot a good portion of it in a train yard, which is insane. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And I had to go through two levels of security just to get on the set. And then next thing, I'm going to a train yard, and I'm thinking, what are we doing? What's going on here? And they had built all this on a train yard. All the scenes you see, it's just, this is what's so remarkable. The only thing that, the day I was on the set, the only two things that were real was the car that Pepper was driving when she pulls up in front of the mansion and sees the big bunny outside, and the bunny. Everything else was green screened. Everything. And we were talking giant green screens. The house wasn't there. None of that was there. It's amazing how much is digitized.
Sorry to kill the illusion for you, kids.
Sorry. They had actually built a live... it's pretty remarkable when you think about it. They shot this whole thing in Wilmington, North Carolina. Maybe some exterior shots in Miami. I think there was some Miami work. But they actually constructed the whole Chinese theater scene where the guy blows himself up. Spoiler alert. In front of that, but all, they actually constructed the entire theater on that lot. It's really remarkable what they did. But we developed their 15 foot bunny. They for them, and it's the bunny that Tony gives to Pepper, and pretty exciting. It was great. We actually manufactured three of them because they burned one, they drowned one, and then the other one was camera ready. So, and here was what was so even more remarkable. We were working with a factory just outside of Raleigh, and these poor guys cleaned out several home improvement stores just to get all the piping and everything for the
armature
to erect inside, because it weighed so much, all the fabric and the fluff and everything. So.
How do you find that much batting? That's what I want to know.
You have to give it a skeletal structure so it doesn't flop over on itself and have no,
exactly.
No pun intended with flopping.
Exactly. Yeah, it was amazing. It was really amazing. So they, it was a factory that worked with the polyfill, the polyester fill anyway. So they could just drum it up, you know, and then they just stuffed it. But I was just. They were truly a godsend for us, because I don't know how I would have done this otherwise. I mean, these things weighed so much when they were finished with them. And they came in, the film crew came in, and they loaded them up into the back of the 18-wheel trucks and took it off to the coast. And so it all worked out flawlessly. I was pretty impressed. But that's pretty much it. And then after that, now I've gotten into the animation business. Just developed my own animated series, Midnight Mares. So if you are not familiar with Midnight Mares, it's I guess you could say, I've heard people call it a darker My Little Pony, but I don't like to be compared with My Little Pony because we're not connected to My Little Pony in any way. This is not a fan film or anything of that nature. It's truly its own original story. If you have a few minutes, I can show the trailer.
We're actually, will link it on our when we post this, we're actually going to get a link to this trailer.
Perfect.
So if you guys would like to see it, that way it's not just a little bit of dead air and the microphone's getting blown up.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
We can play it after we're done recording.
Yes, yeah, you can play it for them after we're done recording.
Well, I have a table right outside, guys. If you want to come by and see it and watch it, we'll have it playing on there, so it's no problem.
Yep. And you guys funded it through Kickstarter, correct?
We funded it through Kickstarter. It was successful. We brought in about $8,000 last month on Kickstarter, well over what I needed, but I love it. I love it. Yes.
What is the name of that weird skeleton one? Because I like that.
Oh, this is Nightfall. This is Nightfall, and this is Daybreak.
Are you selling Nightfall?
Yeah, we are selling those out there.
Oh my God, I'm so
buying that. There you go.
Yes.
What's the whole premise of Nightmare?
Midnightmares.
Midnightmares. What's the premise of that?
Well, do you want to go into this? I know we're kind of jumping off topic from where you want to.
Well, actually, we're. We can get to that a little bit. Like, we actually have a little bit of agenda we got to hit with this, but we can get to that.
No,
it's fine.
We'll do questions later. Okay.
But the reason that we have Chris on is since he's done some work in both comics and print, in print and in movies.
Are you okay?
He's gonna be okay. Like he's a tough little guy.
He does this.
Yeah. So we felt it was appropriate for him to be on because we're gonna talk about a little bit of what goes on in the crossover between the movie universes versus the comic book print universes. For those of you who don't know, there is a lot of discrepancy between the two. And we're not going to put a label of good or bad on any of this. We are just going to discuss kind of how all this works and maybe do a little bit of speculation on why certain things are the way they are. So, as we said, this is about movies and print. We'll start it off there. For those of you who don't know, the comic book universes in movies right now and on TV have just exploded in a really, really big way, which is good because it's given a lot of credence and a lot of exposure to comic book in print, which is helpful because without the print side of it, none of this would exist, and if it goes out of business, then it's just done. So it's we're, those of us who are collectors of old school comics and whatnot are appreciative of the new versions of things that are helping keep what we love alive.
Also because I have my long boxes full of money now.
all that crap that was only worth 25 cents is now worth hundreds of dollars. It's very important to bring up the fact that there is a huge difference in storyline and in continuity between the print universe and the non-print universe. That's very important.
So the first thing I think about on the topic is, if you're talking about specifically, I'm a really big fan of the Marvel movies, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and what I find fascinating about the way they translate it and the reason that there's discrepancies there is because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you can be a huge fan of something but still go in. I mean, we're going into Civil War, and without spoiling anything in the comics, there are very, very specific things that happen in Civil War that change the entire universe. But we're going into the movie, and we have no idea if that's going to happen or not.
Because certain characters aren't going to be involved. Certain characters that we never thought in a million years were going to be involved in the cinematic universe are.
People who are going to be involved in a different capacity than they were in the actual comics. And it's that's very important to address because when you're changing medium, you'll find that there's a big group pro and con in terms of comic book fans and print media and what they have to say about the movie universe, because some comic book fans are like, I hate this because it's not the way I remember reading it, and that's not cool, and I want it to be what it was. And then there are other people who are like, you know, it's fine that it's different. I want to be surprised. I want something new, and it's okay to change story. And just as a personal note that I like to say whenever we talk about something like this, you cannot translate something scene for scene or anything like that when you change mediums. You just can't. It doesn't work the same. It doesn't read the same.
Generally speaking,
like for the most part, but you're not going to get
like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah,
was pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
But there are certain things that you can't do. Like you cannot take Infinite Crisis, which is a DC storyline that includes every single character, or Crisis on Infinite Earth. Sorry, every character in the DC universe up until that point is in that book. Every which we're talking about hundreds and. Hundreds of characters in one run of comics, which is like 10 issues. That's just not doable on the screen. So you just have to accept that some things can't be the same. And I feel that that's very, very pertinent to the conversation at hand. Yes?
I was going to make my own anime movie, but I kind of scrapped it.
That is another thing, is if you have an idea, for those of you who are creators, if it doesn't work in one medium, it could work in another medium.
Well, and that's not uncommon either. You see a lot of times that people have ideas for movies and stuff and find that like the comic books are like a cheaper way to do that.
Yep.
Because the way they're buying up comic book properties now,
it's
like, well, I'll just turn it into a comic book, wait for somebody to come along and purchase it.
And then I'll turn it into the movie that I wanted to do in the first place.
With Midnight Mares, did you want to start in print and you just kind of got interested in animation? Or was this always an animation project?
It's really funny. We several years into this, I guess it was probably about 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago, one of our clients, actually it was an old school client, it was one of the first clients I ever had when I started my company, had come back to us. We had developed a simple product for him, and he said, guess what? He called me up, he said, guess what? And I said, what? He said, I got the license for My Little Pony to do the toys. And I said, what? I mean, how did you arrange that? And he said, well, apparently, I don't think there's really any super young kids here. He said, apparently Hasbro's whoring out the line right now. So they're sending it to everybody. And yes.
What sparked the interest in it? I mean, what?
That was it. So that was really the spark. He came to me and said, can you start developing My Little Pony toys for me? Can you manufacture them? You do custom toys. I don't have anyone to turn to. You did a great job with my last order. I said, oh, sure. I was ecstatic. And then, of course, since then, we've developed Minecraft toys. We've gotten into a lot of the... If you've ever seen the Minecraft toy at Walmart or Target, you can squeeze it and it explodes. We made that. So we don't advertise it. We can't advertise it, but we developed it for Jinx. So it's been an interesting ride, but that was really what sparked it for me, was to do the My Little Pony, because I saw the fandom. It was insane. And BronyCon, which is the big brony convention in Baltimore, came to us and said, can you develop our souvenir toys for us? And this was not this year, but the previous year. And I said, sure, we can do that. And I think at that point, once I started working on that and just getting involved and seeing the fanaticism behind it and learning more about the story and the concept and what really connects the Brony community, I just said, you know, this is something that I'm really interested in. It was sort of a eureka moment where I had the idea for Midnight Mares, which is more of a twist. You know, the My Little Pony they have the little cutie marks and this sort of thing, but Midnight Mares is a little bit, and I've always been twisted in all the work I've ever done. So with Midnight Mares, it's more about alternate personalities, alter egos, sort of like we all have our own, I wouldn't say we all have our own demons, but we all have that alter ego, that side of us that not everyone else sees. And I realized as I was writing it that it had a great appeal to teenagers, to the teenage audience, and my own son is 14, and so it was certainly something that I picked his brain on a lot. So there were, I guess I could say there was a lot of other inspirations that went into it, and now it's sort of taken a life on its own, and we've been able to, oh, I'm going to get the shit out of here. It's a little loud. Sounds like Herbie Hancock out there.
Is that Herbie Hancock?
spinning
the tunes.
I'm human Shazam.
Shazam.
So that was really it. We went to BronyCon and it was a huge success. And all I had at that time was I had commissioned a guy to do the animation for us, and it just exploded from there. So it's it was really great, because in getting what we kind of jumping back on the topic here. What I've learned, and we are developing a comic book series. We're going to be launching a Kickstarter for it probably in the next 60 days. And if you go to our Facebook page, go to Midnight Mares series on Facebook, and you can like it and take a look at all of our work on there. We've already started posting some of the comic book work, some of the illustration work. I guess the biggest thing is, I think with a comic book, and even from my previous history with that, I realized it's similar to episodic television. Mm-hmm. You have to leave people with a cliffhanger at the end of every issue so they'll want to come back and watch the next one. Or the story has to be so engaging as to do that. And I think motion pictures are sort of, especially in the Marvel Universe lately, they're sort of getting into that. That's what's sort of brilliant about what they've done.
Everything's a cliffhanger.
Everything's a cliffhanger. They give you that little bit at the end now to hook you for the next one.
Next three.
And you feel like, if, yeah. Right? And
the
you
next
feel like,
25
where's
movies.
Infinity Gauntlet?
Well, and you feel like if you don't go see that next connective point, you're going to miss something major. Right.
And what's brilliant is they've...
That is very common.
They've made it super accessible to where there's throwaway lines in every Marvel movie, but if you've seen the previous, and they're not throwaway, but if you don't see them, it's kind of like, eh, why'd he say that? But if you know what's going on, you're like, yes!
And it's kind of brilliant that they tied it into the Marvel Shield, Agents of Shield.
That was so ambitious.
It's very ballsy.
They pulled it off.
And it worked out really well, and it was funny because one of my friends was totally confused. Because he watched the series and didn't go see Winter Soldier. Oh, and he was like, what happened in the middle of just like the shitstorm? Like, I just don't understand why it's totally different.
Everybody's
now
whispering Hail Hydra.
I don't understand what's happening.
I'm confused.
So, and that's very comic booky. So that is something that the TV and movie universes have kept, which is they need to hook you in a way. And like when they're doing big storylines in DC and Marvel, what they'll do is they'll do the main issues from the story, and then they'll do runoff issues, basically, of different titles that tie in with that title. The one that I always go to is a very recent one, which is Forever Evil from DC, which came out about 2.5-3 years ago.
It was that long ago?
It was that long ago. And if you read that, you can get the whole story in the 7-issue run of Forever Evil title, but then they have, like, Forever Evil Arkham War, Forever Evil Suicide Squad, Forever Evil Justice League, and all these other issues. So it's a 7-issue run with over 50 side books that take you through the rest of the stuff that you miss.
And let's be honest, on both
you don't
end,
need it.
But on both ends, film and print, they're trying to get your money.
Yes. So be aware of that.
It's a business.
Like it's not just for the pure joy of making side stories and making it fun. It's for like, oh, this is fun, but you're going to make us a lot of money. So please continue buying into the pedal. So,
content creators are pushers. Let's not lie.
So Chris, have
you feel like you're forced to do it like a video game, do it with DLC?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
It is very much, and that's what's awesome about it, is you can choose your level of involvement. Chris, what have you noticed in, so I assume that the animated, is it a show, web series, what do you call it?
Well, we're starting The Nightmares more as the web series, webisodes, if we can continue to get the funding off of Kickstarter. And maybe even moving into, I keep hearing one talk about, is it Patreon?
Patreon.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people had a lot of people suggest I get on there, and they said, hey, you know, we'll pay your salary
that
every
sounds,
month.
That sounds good for this.
Yes, exactly.
And you don't have to solicit advertisers.
Yep. Oh, see, that's awesome. Yeah. So that's really awesome. I can just release it for free. Everyone can enjoy it.
Basically, you have your patrons that help you out and choose their level of involvement with how much they want to give you per month, and it's a pretty neat little deal.
So I actually didn't even get to ask my question.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So in the context between the show and the comic, I assume they're running in like a similar continuity, if not the same continuity. Have you noticed anything that changes your approach to the different mediums? Say, if I'm writing the show, I might do this thing, but the pacing has to be different so that doesn't play as the comic?
Well, and I've studied screenwriting, and actually it's I wrote a screenplay for the comic book, actually both comic books that I published back in the 90s. I studied screenwriting, and it was very interesting to, because I guess, I'm jumping around here, but when you're developing a screenplay, when you're writing a movie, especially if you're coming from comic books, I mean, you're used to writing 24 pages, roughly, if you break it down with not including your ads and that sort of thing.
And
now you've got, and now you have to, exactly, now you have to fill in 90 minutes, basically, and in a motion picture, in a screenplay, one page is equal to about a minute of screen time. So you have to really stick to those mechanics that you learned back in English class.
Tighten it up.
The rising action, which is from your beginning all the way to your climax at about
3/4 of the way.
Exactly. So now, you know, you got some people at Tarantino have turned that completely upside down, but basically
from the very beginning, it's just mayhem.
Exactly. So you start. So you start with your rising action, then you get to the top, and you have your climax, and then in screenwriting they call it the reversal. Yeah, with, of course, M. Night Shyamalan, you got
the twist.
The big twist. So you have your reversal and then your falling action, which leads into, of course, in Marvel's universe, into the next movie.
No conclusion ever.
No conclusion. It keeps going on continuous. And that's really the biggest difference. I think it was the biggest thing for me in writing a screenplay was, first of all, you got to find enough fluff to fill in 90 minutes. But it's not such a bad thing because it stretches your imagination. It really, when I had developed Good versus Evil, I had sort of this very short-sighted view of what I was doing, what I wanted to do from issue to issue, and I sort of winged it from issue to issue. I thought, well, where am I going to take the characters in the next issue? But with a motion picture, when I was writing the screenplay, I had to really, you have to go into character development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you realize you spend a lot of that time, that 90 minutes, just developing and developing those characters and even showing some of the background, you know, what made them this way and a lot of the origin. You kind of blend it all together.
It's like you've got to do character development while having interesting things on screen as well, which is kind of a weird balance. It's exposition during the rising action, which is kind of hard, which I imagine is kind of hard. Because, like, with a comic book, you've got that opening page, here's what's been going on in the last four issues.
Right.
Boom, Mizen's.
You got the crawl. So
yeah,
to speak.
You got your crawl, and then you're in medias res, you're in the middle of it. And, you know, with a film, it's like, you need to tell everybody what's going on, even if they haven't seen the first part of the film.
The big thing that I think is kind of an important thing to distinguish in this that really brings up the difference between the print versus screen is that even if you negate the fact that the print media comics have been around for 75 plus years, those characters have developed who they are over massive amounts of time, and they change and they grow and they evolve. And it's really important to remember that, because that's what hooks a reader for comic books, is I want to see how this person evolves week to week or month to month over the next 5, 10, 15, 50 years. Whereas in a movie, we got to get it done in an hour and a half, and it's the whole character.
Yeah.
And like, and so that's a very important distinguishing
factor.
You
see a lot of interesting stuff happening, too. Like, in my opinion, Scarlett Johansson is not Black Widow from the comics.
No,
she's
not even close.
Interpretation of that character we haven't seen before. Sam Jackson's Nick Fury is not the Nick Fury that we have in the comics. Well, until after
they put him in there.
But also a very compelling version of that, you know? And I think that's cool to be able to have people come in that don't have the same comic book background and aren't inundated with all of this canon and stuff, and being able to give them, like, hey, reinvent this character and make them interesting and base it on these stories, but do something that people are going to enjoy, you know, that we haven't seen.
Had Marvel never done the Ultimate Universe, then the current Marvel Cinematic Universe would not be successful.
Yeah.
Because you can take a character like Nick Fury and kind of change him up and be like, oh, he's more based on the Ultimate Universe. You can't do that with Hal Jordan. If you bring in Hal Jordan and he's a sweet, nice family man, it's not going to play.
People
are going to be like, no, that's not Hal Jordan.
I think this is a very important thing to mention right now, because I actually wanted to segue into something that recently happened in comic book movie chronology and universe. The new Fantastic Four movie just crapped all over this agenda.
Let's talk about
that. I don't know how many of you have or haven't.
Talk about it.
I don't know how many of you have or haven't seen it, but I actually had to write a paper on the movie for class. And one of the questions on the like list of things that we needed to discuss was, what does the viewer need to have in terms of a mindset to understand the genius of this movie? And I just shit all over that idea. I was just like, the mindset you need to have is, this is a crap movie. And I'm not going to give anything away about the movie, but the thing that Colin just mentioned that's very, very, very telling of this is they did something ridiculous in that movie that makes zero sense, and that is they took a very, very popular character that has a huge following in Doctor Doom, and they completely changed him to where he's not Doom anymore.
Unrecognizable.
He's not just in costume, not just in physicality, but the character.
He's a little weenie.
No, he's not the same guy. It's not the same intellect. Like, it's like in comic book print, he's not really a genius. He's, in terms of like science, he's more of a genius in business. He's suave. He's debonair. He's like kind of a very pretty boy ladies man, and he's super business savvy, and he's just totally not that. And then Dr. Doom, after Von Doom becomes Dr. Doom, he has very, very specific motivations and drives that make him Dr. Doom and make him relatable, and he's none of that in the movie. So it begs the question, why even do Dr. Doom? Just do a different goddamn character and don't call him Dr. Doom.
Why does it always be Dr. Doom? Why can't we have the Mole Man?
Yeah, like, and it's totally pointless.
I like the Mole Man.
No, but, like, and that's the point, is, like, if you're going to do a character, and it's a character that, like, if you're going to do a fourth-string character that nobody gives a crap about and make him, like, make somebody care about them, awesome. But if you're going to take an icon like Doom, and you're not going to write him even close to what Doom is, what's the point? Why not just, like, do what you wanted to do with Doom and just call him something different?
As soon as I heard that they were going to make him a hacker, I just slammed my head into my desk.
Oh, it's terrible. It's legitimately awful. Yeah.
I'm really concerned. I don't think these two are really related, but I'm really concerned about Suicide Squad and Joker.
We've actually talked about that before. This has come up on our panel quite a bit. If you want to hear our take on this, we'll give you the link to when we talk about that.
We'll table that
for later. That's that very good point.
I have a question, since we have a content creator here.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, Jared Leto is a client. He's one of my clients.
So be careful. All right?
So watch your mouth.
He's not going to kill us. He's just going to hurt us very, very badly.
He's a good guy. You can say whatever you want.
As a content creator, what is your barrier to entry into somebody adapting your work for the screen? So what would need to happen? Because, I mean, as a content creator, speaking from as one, and we have a couple, like Alex and Chris are as well.
Everybody at this table is a writer.
We hold our creations very precious to us. So, I mean, what's the price tag, or what's going to need to happen?
Where do I sell out?
Exactly. Yeah. Wait, what's the level to sell out?
All right, just do whatever you want. Yeah. Like, go retire in St. Bart's.
What's my price point before I let you crap all over my content?
And how much involvement would you want to be? Like, if somebody came to you and said, we want to buy Midnight Mares, we want to turn it into a CGI/live-action thing, what's the negotiations here? How much creative control are you going to want? Like, what's... Because, I mean, it's your babies. Like, it's...
You don't want to. One of the most interesting things, I've been traveling the show circuit for the past year and a half. I mean, basically since I launched this, I've been at quite a few of the Brony conventions, of course, and it's great because I have found a lot of just picking people's brains. And I mean, everyone I think has that writing capability to some extent. They may not know how to put it on paper, but
everybody knows what they want.
Especially
to see,
when you get in the Q&A. And people, you know, we've been explaining the concept, and they're like, well, have you ever thought about doing this? And I'm thinking, wow, that's a fantastic idea. So, and keeping in line with what you were saying, I don't know that I would be, for example, going all 50 Shades of Grey on it where E.L. James would not let them do absolutely anything with that movie. She pretty much ran it. She ran it into the ground, I mean, for the most part.
Well, I mean, because she knows...
Eating your own puke or something?
I mean, yes.
She also ripped 98% of that off from Stephanie Meyer anyway. So.
right. Yeah, exactly. So
that's not a lie.
No, for those of you who don't know, that started out as a like fan fiction Twilight. Like, I saw the original script, horribly full of grammar and spelling errors. Anyway. It was the most annoying thing.
Okay, if you want to see a great movie before 50 Shades, Secretary is one of the best movies. And it's so funny because the character in Secretary is Mr. Grey too, so it's not Christian Grey, but it's Mr. Grey, her boss. I thought it was
how did E.L. James not get sued to death?
I don't know. But I
back
know
to what you were saying.
Because who even cares anymore?
Chris, back to what you were saying. Yeah. What was
I saying? Yeah.
Was because the lawyer's wife loved the book too much, and every time this lawyer's trying to
take
it,
he's like,
"Oh no, this book!"
Probably.
You were talking about your cell point.
The creative control. So, yeah. I think to a degree, I would not go that to that. If someone wanted to do it, I would absolutely put in the contract that I could be. I would want to be a creative consultant on the show. I don't know that I would. I think especially with a series like Midnight Mares, it's such a unique story just in and of itself that you could take it in a thousand different directions, but yet keep the overall premise the same.
Right.
So basically, and you would want to play the role as like a group editor in the comic book world where keep basically like a character Bible, like, no, this character would never do that, it's outside of their character, but you're feel free to make your own story set under my conditions of
exactly.
The world.
There are parameters in which you can work under.
Let's leave the premise the same, but you guys can bring a different writer on every episode and take it in a bunch of different directions as long as you follow, you know, stay within the highway.
Don't jump the shark.
Exactly.
Basically.
Let's think of an example of creative control is when Nintendo gave the rights to a company to make a Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Oh, God. Oh, I saw it in theaters.
I love it. I just want to point out how much I love that terrible piece of crap. There's something really, really awe-inspiring about movies that are so bad they're good.
You hear the stories about
Howard the Duck.
Yes.
Have you guys heard the stories of, like, basically Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo knew it was a turd from the beginning, so 98% of the time you see them on screen, they're hammered.
Yeah. Just drunk. Just
hammered.
They were, like, drinking whiskey.
Yeah. Like, this is fun. Yoshi. But anyway, so, like, in terms of that, did you have a kind of a follow-up with it?
Yeah, well, they just gave Nintendo's philosophy was that a terrible movie wouldn't let their company go corrupt, and that's true, because they're still thriving today.
They're still thriving. Yeah.
And you know what? The toy sales for that movie were insane.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just because people wanted Mario toys.
Yeah, and it's, the thing is that there's, every studio, you have to understand, is built on the premise of we need to make money. And so even if they put out a really terrible product, if they can recoup what they put into making of that product in any other fashion, whether it be toys or like T-shirts and merchandise or anything that they can do.
Advertisement,
anything that they can do to recoup.
Lucky Charms.
Yeah, like...
Dr. Pepper.
I'm sure that Greek restaurants did amazingly well after the end of the first Avengers.
I ate so much shawarma.
Yeah, like...
I mean, my shawarma...
And that was, I guarantee you, that was the shawarma lobby.
Yeah, like...
pressuring... No, sorry.
There's, like, one guy who's like, put shawarma in the movie.
I was
like,
open it up to...
Yeah,
if you guys have any questions for Chris...
Anybody at all have some questions about... you first, then you.
Okay, my friend's, like, turning out this, series called, My Little Zombie, Friendship...
Oh,
he's a serious brony. I mean, like, seriously.
Oh, no, that's great.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, you have any tips for him? I think I can tell him.
Or you can tell him to listen in on this podcast.
He's a YouTuber, so
we can give you a card.
I don't know. What's he doing with him? Is he want to make a series about it?
Yeah, he's, like, making, like, webisodes on, like, his YouTube.
Okay. Well, I think that's certainly a good start. I think it's important in a situation like that when it's parody that you absolutely advertise as parody so you do not incur the wrath of they who shall not be named. And
you have to Weird Al Yankovic it. Or,
yeah. So I would say tread carefully. I mean, there's a lot of that stuff out there. There's there are actually a couple of lines with similar. There's some other... you could probably just Google demon ponies or something like that. There are several. I know there's a company, Big Shot Toy Works. They do a lot of. They've got this apocalypse ponies they've just released that were on Kickstarter.
They're real cool. They're really cool. They are super cool.
Yeah, those guys are cool. I've seen them at Toy Fair in New York every year, and they're good. They're good people. I would just tell them to tread carefully. And I think the biggest thing. What seems to work best in this is if you develop the following first, you know, whether you start with a comic book or you start doing some fan stories or something like that. If they have the money for the animation or if they're willing, if they animate themselves, then go for it. Get it out there and just see what the public says about it. Because I guarantee you, especially with the Brawling movement, they're going to find a lot of fans out of that. I think it's going to be really fun.
And as compartmentalized as the internet is, you can find a fan for anything.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
I think in the red first, and then I saw a hand in the back. You're next.
I've seen a lot of people say Jared Leto's not going to be a good Joker because...
this again.
I just wanted to ask, I mean, what's y'all's opinion on that as far as what you've seen so far?
I don't think I've aired my opinion on it yet.
We can do this quick.
We do a real quick one, we all have our own interview.
Like I said, we'll get you the link. We have another episode where we talk about this a lot. So we'll get you the link to that. It was the last time we were here. I'm fully in support of it. I'm excited. I love seeing new versions of the Joker.
Yeah.
My opinion on it is basically you got to be really careful with something like that in terms of not just the portrayal of the Joker in the acting sense, but also the visual sense. And I have a real issue with the visual sense of it, and I'm worried that's going to bleed over into the acting sense of it. And that's where my trepidation comes in, is I'm really worried about that. but I just withhold my reservations until I see it.
Yeah, so. Initially with me, I saw the set photo. I'm a big fan of the director, David Ayer. I've seen a lot of what he's done. His influence is very heavily in Southeast LA. Like, that's kind of what he's known for. So everything's going to have a little bit more of a... I hesitate to use this phrase, a little more... urban gangster, Southern LA vibe. And that's why he's got the tattoos and the grills. But I mean, coming from a character,
grills so weird.
But coming from a character standpoint, how many times has Batman bashed his teeth in where he needs grills?
My teeth are metal now; they can't come out.
We've seen gangster. We've seen gangster as in like old school mob gangster with Jack Nicholson. We've seen anarchist. So I'm ready for a different take. What I'm also ready for is just pure unbridled just insanity from the Joker.
Like, I want him to be really selfish.
Yeah, really selfish.
A really good selfish Joker.
So I'm interested to see what they're going to do. I'm not a fan of the tattoos. I think it's a little different. They're too well done.
That was my issue as well. Like, that's my biggest issue.
Like, I feel like if he was going to have tattoos, he'd be doing it on himself, and his rocker would be upside down because he'd always be looking at it.
If the Joker's going to sit down and get a tattoo, A, he's not going to go to like that sweet shop and pay like $600 to get his shit done. He's going to like sit down on some scratcher's table and be like, halfway through, he's like, I'm bored. And he's going to get up, and there's just a line across his stomach.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I have too much ADHD. I got to go. Like, and then it's just gone.
I trust David Ayer with the source material because he made one of the best movies of last year in Fury. So I trust him, and we'll just see what happens. I mean, the proof is in the pudding next year. Yeah.
Do you have a take on this, by the way?
Well, I mean, I...
He's a client.
He's going to be awesome.
Did you build anything for Suicide Squad?
No. I don't think there's any stuffed animals in that one. If there is, I'll be a very...
Two degrees of separation.
You'll be very upset.
Right. First of all, I'm so glad to see that Jared, you know, received the Academy Award last year. I think that is phenomenal. I have always believed that he was one of the most underrated actors. Yep. I mean, he is
fantastic,
phenomenal. He is.
A lot of people forget he was an actor before a musician.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he did a movie. I think it's actually on Netflix right now, where he plays an old man. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, Mr. Nobody.
That is a phenomenal piece of work.
It's nuts.
It's all over the map, but it's
totally worth it.
But once you get to the end and it starts to unfold, it's a really phenomenal movie because he's playing this old man and he's playing all these different
versions of himself over the course of like over a century. It is really good. And also, for those of you who don't know, Mr. Nobody. He was also in Fight Club.
He was a pretty boy that got his face.
Yeah, he got his face turned into mush. It was kind of interesting watching.
Like, I think he had the blonde hair. Yeah. Fight Club,
he had the blonde shock.
I felt like destroying something beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. That, which is really amazing that Jared Leto was basically like the lead into one of the most iconic lines of that movie.
Yeah.
I love. And he is beautiful.
Also, Jared Leto's so beautiful.
I'd touch it.
War.
I'd touch it.
Yeah.
Question in the back. When you guys get famous and you have your baby movies over, we have to look on the screen and see if we can find you guys.
If I ever make a movie, if that ever happens, I will just stay in North Carolina.
We will still be doing this.
Yeah, we will still come to Dink Cons and do little tiny cons. And everybody will be like, we're going to go to this con to see these guys. And we're going to be like, no. We're just going to sit in the back and talk crap about everybody. That's what we're going to do.
Any other questions?
We good on that?
Oh,
one more?
What do you think of the DC Cinematic Universe and how they're starting off there?
I'm a DC fanboy. I'm a DC guy. I've been a Batman fan. Like, I remember seeing Batman 89 in the theater at 3 years old.
So good.
Yeah, I'm old. Deal with it.
Suck it.
So, I mean, did I have my issues with Man of Steel? Yeah, I did. I thought there was a lot of good there. I really wish they'd stop giving David Goyer just complete free reign. That dude needs to be reined in so hard on a lot of things. I was a fan of Zack Snyder until I saw Sucker Punch. Sucker Punch was garbage. It was creepy and weird.
That's awful.
Way too much Lolita stuff going on in there for my taste. But I feel like he really redeemed himself with Man of Steel, and I think he launched it in the right direction. It's a little bit darker, a little bit grittier, which a lot of people are crapping on right now. But you know, we can't all have super happy superhero fun time all the time. There's got to be some real
there's got to be some
darkness and some stakes that are raised. Because if you notice in Avengers after that, you know, they really didn't address the fact that New York was completely destroyed.
Yeah,
that's going to be a central thing with Metropolis here coming up pretty soon. So I'm excited.
They do complain about Superman tearing up a couple buildings.
Yeah.
Like, but
oh, it was just unreasonable. Yeah. Two gods flying through a city, and that's unreasonable. Yeah. Buildings get destroyed.
But
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing:
we can do an hour on this.
Yeah, we could. But in terms of our podcast, we have a DC fanboy, a Marvel fanboy, and kind of a moderate.
You can't sit on the fence with this one.
I can't really sit on the fence with this one. I do lean a little bit more DC. I am torn on this. This particular topic is something that I've thought about long and hard. And
kept him up at nights.
I can't sleep from this. But the thing is that one of my friends said something that was very telling of this particular topic, which is when watching the last Marvel movie, he was like, "I just realized what DC is missing in their comic or in their movie universe, and that is fun." And I do think there needs to be a little bit more fun because I'd like to see the snarky, dry Batman. And I'd like to see some more stuff like that. But I think that this should not be written off. It's very clear what the script is going for. And for those of you who don't know, this is very clearly an adaptation of Frank Miller's very last chapter of The Dark Knight Returns.
This much.
It's loosely it's based like on it.
This much expanded.
Yeah, but... I'm hopefully optimistic,
you're cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
I think that there will be some really great things and some things that are a little bit unfortunate. But I think it's best to not write something like this off until you watch it. And always remember, as comic book fans, it will change depending on the medium. I cannot state this enough. It is not going to read scene for scene the way it does in the comics. It is not going to be the same interpretation of the characters or the same interpretation of the story.
Go into it with an open mind.
Please, like, if you're going to see this and you are old school comic book fans, you need to understand that this is a different medium and they cannot do it the exact same way that they did it in print. It just isn't possible.
And we're in a renaissance. It's not like they're still putting out... Granted, the most recent Fantastic Four was garbage, but it's not like Roger Corman still has the rights and is making stuff like that.
Right.
Just open mind, open heart.
I think Batman and Superman's gonna be super compelling.
I'm
excited about that. I was a little bummed out about Man of Steel. I think my opinion's changed a little bit seeing what they're doing with Batman and Superman. We'll see. Chris, you have an opinion on DCU?
I think you know what I like about it. What I like about what DC is doing is...
waiting for you to say they're a client.
It's actually not a client. That is rare. What's going on here?
Everything is weird today.
I know, right? I love that they are... I love that the DC movies tend to be a bit grittier, like you were saying. Whereas Marvel has just kind of got this happy-go-lucky, feel-good... And it's not that it's great. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Obviously, these are blockbuster movies they're releasing.
Even when it's dark, it's not that dark.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like you made James Spader not nearly as creepy as you could have, which is weird and hard to do.
Well, yeah. So. And I admired that Marvel turned Guardians of the Galaxy into such a fantastic hit.
That was one of the best sci-fi movies.
Exactly. Yeah. It was phenomenal. And so
take Marvel out of it. It's just a good sci-fi.
But what I think is amazing about DC is. It's like they found their niche as well.
Yeah.
And I think their niche is really sort of this grittier take on a lot of the characters and sort of reworking it, but not to the point of where you've got fanboys everywhere having fits of rage.
Conniption fits over it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I will burn an effigy of Jim Lee if he pisses me off. But I'm just glad they're not in direct Like, I feel like the big two have now comfortably found their place.
There's no low blows.
There's no infringement on... And that's kind of... I kind of only have one more thing to say in terms of a closing statement for myself. I think it's important when you go into comic book movies to watch a comic book movie as two different movies. I think it's important to watch it as a comic book movie and then as a secondary movie.
Yeah.
So when you went in to see Winter Soldier, it was a comic book movie as well as an espionage movie.
It was a good one at that.
Yeah, and when you went in to see Guardians of the Galaxy, it was a comic book movie a sci-fi movie.
Ant-Man's comic book movie, heist movie.
Yeah, so you need to go into these movies and you need to look at them at two different angles because if you just watch it as one... it's not the
you're
full
not
movie.
Appreciate it, yeah.
So it's really important to think that even if this craps all over something I love about continuity in a comic book, did it accomplish its secondary goal well?
Absolutely. That's a good
And it's very important because whether or not the movie does what you want it to do, was it still a good movie? And that's very important to watch.
I think we got time for one more question.
That's great advice because I'm going to watch Age of Ultron the second time.
Yeah.
What's your views on Ant-Man?
Never saw it yet.
I have not seen Ant-Man yet.
I have full-time school and full-time third shift work, and I just bought a house, so I don't have free time.
I think the first night it came out, it wasn't that bad.
I really enjoyed it. I'm a diehard Edgar Wright fanboy. I love him to death, and everything he touches, in my opinion, turns to gold. So, to see him drop out at the last minute really broke my heart.
Everything?
Yes, everything.
Oh God!
What is wrong with you people?
You don't understand.
So to hear about his dropping out of the project in the last minute really did break my heart. The DNA is still in there, and you could see what he was probably going to do with it, and I think it would have been great. It's still a good movie, and it was a great time. It was a great heist movie. Paul Rudd didn't disappoint.
If it's fun, it's fun.
Evangeline Lilly was actually a nice breath of fresh air. She wasn't a damsel in distress, but she also wasn't like a hardcore badass female. But she's going to be. Spoilers. there's two fingers. Stay for both. But yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm excited to see more stuff like that. Smaller, quieter stories in the Marvel Universe are going to be a lot more fun.
Secondary and tertiary characters are very important.
Yeah, I did see Ant-Man, and actually it's something else I was just thinking about. We were talking about earlier about some of the things Marvel was doing with their, talking about the books being dramatically different in some cases. Yep. I mean, the movies being dramatically different from the books. And I know when I was working with Iron Man 3, one of the things I was hearing was they were really wanting to show Stark's vulnerability in Iron Man 3 with the anxiety attacks and everything that he was going through. They wanted to, it was all leading up to, again, Avengers of Ultron, you know, this humanity in him, you know, even though he's in this giant suit of armor, he is really the most human out of everybody in the group.
Yeah,
and the most flawed by...
We haven't even gotten to the alcohol.
Well, yeah, he actually, just so everybody knows, they lead into that a little bit with him being a little bit too drunk in a couple scenes. There's a huge storyline arc with Tony being an alcoholic.
Demon in the bottle.
In the comic books. So, like, that is not a throwaway. That is, like, a legitimate nod to comic book fans. So.
One of my favorite comic book covers either.
There's also Stan Lee in Age of Ultron.
Yeah, so I mean, like, just be aware that even little things that you might not think are important are important.
Yeah, and basically what you were saying, I believe that, I thought Ant-Man was fantastic, and I think he's actually going to be, is he any in
Civil War?
Yeah. He's in Civil War as well, coming out.
Because so, the Falcon was like, I know a guy.
Yeah, so I'm excited. I've actually, Ant-Man surprised me. I wasn't sure. And that's what is so wonderful about Marvel. They are able to take some of these smaller characters in terms of the universe. They've got a really deep pool. Yeah, and they're just, you got Doctor Strange coming out. I'm sure it'll be a fantastic movie. And
who would have ever thought
kidding.
So I really enjoy it. If you haven't seen Ant-Man, it is absolutely worth the price
of
the ticket.
Michael Douglas and Paul Rudd's interplay with each other was just so good.
It was very awesome.
I think we're about at time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my shameless plug.
Yeah, please do. Please, please, please.
We have these here at the show. These are 15 each or 2 for 20, so it's excellent if you buy them both. These are resin. We do not have very many of them. I only brought a few, so 2 for $20. And this is midnightmares.com, Facebook Midnightmares series.
How do you spell midnightmares?
It was Mares. Just the word midnight and then mares. Yeah,
M-A-R-E-S.
Yeah, it's like a play on words.
Yep.
This is my other line. Most people have never heard of this. This is actually Unholy Foods. So it was something I did kind of on a little lark. We actually had animation made for that as well. Unholyfoods.com and Unholy Foods on Facebook. All we have left are the zombie peanut butter and jelly sandwiches today. They're $5 a piece. Not a big deal, but we don't have. I think I brought. I only have like 20, so we've been selling them already.
Get them on the hat.
$5 sandwich. Go buy your lunch and then buy one of these to sit and look at while you're eating.
And then these are $10,000 on eBay.
Yeah, this guy's $10,000, I think, something like that. I'm not sure.
Well, Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
I love it.
Give yourselves a round of applause.
Thank you guys for coming and sitting in. We have another panel today at 3:30. We are going to be talking about indie comics, where they started, where they've gone, and where they are now.
And we'll hang out and talk.
Yep.
I don't know if you want to show them the trailer or not.
Oh, yeah. All I got right here on my laptop.
So once again, thank you guys. Come back and join us for the second one.
Thank you, guys.
Come watch this trailer.
Yeah.
Just real quick, what's y'all's opinions of the Deadpool?
I'm so for it. I'm so for it.
I'm excited.